Hello, and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session, Overview of Networking in Windows Vista. My name is Valerie Lee. Connecting users to resources and content in a secure, simple, and manageable way is critical to the success and health of any organization. Users expect their data to be accessible wherever they are. Administrators are challenged with providing more advanced networking services, and corporate or government regulations may require stronger security measures to protect data from unauthorized access. All this must be done while, at the same time, reducing the cost of managing network resource access. Windows Vista represents the largest set of networking innovations since Windows 95 and provides enhancements in many areas to help make access to network resources seamless and more secure while keeping configuration and management efforts to a minimum. In the year since Windows 95 was released, there have been many changes to networking bandwidth, including more prevalent use of high bandwidth and wireless links. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn includes a new set of performance enhancements to increase throughput in high bandwidth, high latency, and high loss networking environments. We will begin today's session by introducing the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn and how it differs from the previous stack. We will look at the architecture of the new stack and the new features that are supported. This includes Receive Windows Auto Tuning and Advanced Detection features. We will look at other improvements to networking in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. In today's work environment, quick access to the internet and other network information is essential. Workers don't have time to waste configuring and managing their network connections. Windows Vista provides a new network and sharing center that provides easy access to many network tasks. We will discuss how to connect and manage network connections in Windows Vista, including wireless connections. Protecting sensitive information is essential in today's technological world. We especially need to secure business-specific information in our network. Networking advances in Windows Vista provide extra layers of security for your organization. Integration of the improved Windows Firewall and IP security allows for centralized management of these two technologies and the ability to easily perform isolation scenarios. Because we are aware of ever-growing companies and the need for the network to keep up with the expanding needs, the networking capabilities in Windows Vista provide worldwide scalability. Through the implementation of IPv6 and receive-side scaling, your network will be able to adjust to changing network requirements. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed out the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to the session or to reference afterwards. Today's session is going to give a technical overview of the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. We will go over how it is improved from the previous version and the general architecture of the stack. However, we will not cover the basics on TCP/IP and how it works. Networking in Windows Vista allows usage of both Internet Protocol Version 4, IPv4, and Internet Protocol Version 6, IPv6. We are going to discuss advantages of using IPv6, but we will not discuss IPv4. Having knowledge of how IPv4 works will help you understand the benefits of the new version. To cover the topics mentioned on the earlier slide and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda. Windows Vista includes an updated implementation of TCP/IP that has innovative improvements to TCP/IP functionality, which address several of today's top networking issues. We will look at the structure of the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn and some of the new features. Windows Vista provides an enhanced networking experience for both the IT administrator, who is responsible for the security, maintenance, and deployment of networked resources, and the end user, who expects a rich, seamless, and dependable networking experience. After looking at the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, we will examine how these goals are accomplished by first looking at how Windows Vista provides for easier connection with the network through the Network and Sharing Center. We will also explain the new network awareness features and how wireless configuration has been improved. With easier connectivity comes the need for greater security. Microsoft recognizes this need and addressed it with the new security measures with Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. In this section, we will look at several of these security features. We will conclude the session by not only examining how to manage your network with Windows Vista, but also explain how Windows Vista provides for greater scalability to adjust to growing organizations. Let's look at the architecture of the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. The original TCP/IP protocol stack was designed in the early 1970s and has been modified over time to meet users' needs. As the needs of customers have increased, a redesign of the TCP/IP protocol stack has become necessary. With this in mind, the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn has improved the TCP/IP functionality for both Internet Protocol Version 4, IPv4, and Internet Protocol Version 6, IPv6. The architecture of the TCP/IP stack has been improved also. The three principal APIs by which applications, services, or other system components access the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn are WinSock Kernel, or WSK, Windows Sockets, and TDI. The WSK API is used by WSK clients. The Windows Sockets API is used by Windows Sockets-based applications and services and operates through the Ancillary Function Driver, or AFD, to perform sockets functions with TCP/IP. The TDI API is used by NetBIOS over TCP/IP and other legacy TDI clients. TDX is a translation layer between TDI and the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. The Windows Filtering Platform API provides a consistent general-purpose interface to perform deep inspection or data modification of packet contents. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn provides access to the packet processing path at the network and transport layers. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn sends and receives frames using NDIS. The architecture of the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn driver, or TCPIP.SYS, consists of three layers. First, the transport layer contains the implementations of TCP and UDP and a mechanism to send raw IP packets that do not need a TCP or UDP header. Next, the network layer contains implementations of both IPv4 and IPv6 in a dual IP layer architecture. Finally, the framing layer contains modules that frame IPv4 or IPv6 packets. Modules exist for physical networking technologies such as IEEE 802.3 Ethernet, IEEE 802.11 Wide Area Networks, and IEEE 1394 interfaces. Modules also exist for logical interfaces such as the loopback interface, IPv4-based tunnels, and IPv6-based tunnels. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn supports a feature called Receive Window Auto-Tuning. The TCP Receive Window Size is the amount of bytes in a memory buffer on a receiving host that is used to store incoming data on a TCP connection. Receive window auto tuning is used to correctly determine the value of the maximum receive window size for a connection based on the current conditions of the network. Receive window auto tuning continually determines the optimal receive window size on a per connection basis by measuring the bandwidth delay product and the application receive rate, and automatically adjusts the maximum receive window size on an ongoing basis. With better throughput between TCP peers, the utilization of network bandwidth increases during data transfer. In the situation where all the applications are optimized to receive TCP data, then the overall utilization of the network can increase substantially. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn has improved routing path detection and recovery. Dead gateway detection is enabled with TCP/IP for Windows Server 2003 and Windows XP. Dead gateway detection is a failover mechanism that automatically changes the default gateway of a computer to the next configured default gateway when a computer has been configured with multiple default gateways on an interface. Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn provide another level of support for dead gateway detection. Now the TCP/IP stack can distinguish whether the local default gateway has failed or if it was a remote gateway that failed. In addition, it provides a failback method to change the default gateway back to the primary default gateway when the primary routing path is restored. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn addresses the failback issue for dead gateways by periodically attempting to send TCP traffic through the previously detected dead gateway. If the TCP traffic sent through the dead gateway is successful, the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn switches the default gateway to the previously detected dead gateway. Support for failback to primary default gateways can provide faster throughput by sending traffic through the primary default gateway on the subnet. In addition, the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn provides neighbor unreachability detection for IPv4. Neighbor unreachability detection is a feature of IPv6 that allows a node to track whether a neighboring node is reachable. A neighboring node is reachable if there has been a recent confirmation that IPv6 packets sent to the neighboring node were received and processed by the neighboring node. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn also supports neighbor unreachability detection for IPv4 traffic by tracking the reachable state of IPv4 neighbors in the IPv4 route cache. IPv4 neighbor unreachability detection determines reachability through an exchange of unicast address resolution protocol, or ARP request, and ARP reply messages, or by relying on upper layer protocols such as TCP. With IPv4 neighbor unreachability detection, IPv4-based communications benefit by determining when neighboring nodes, including routers, are no longer reachable and reporting the condition. With the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, if TCP connections begin to retransmit segments, the stack tries to determine whether the current default gateway is still reachable by sending a unicast ARP request message. If the default router does not reply, the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn changes the default gateway to the next one on the list. If the default router replies, dead gateway detection eventually changes the default gateway to the next one on the list. In addition to the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, other networking features in Windows Vista provide a better user experience. So now that we have explained the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, let's look at the first set of improved networking features in Windows Vista. These features highlight the ease of which you can now connect to the network. Windows Vista's Network and Sharing Center provides a clear view of the current connection status, available wireless networks, a network map to show surrounding network resources on a home or unmanaged network, and easy methods to create or join ad hoc wireless networks. With Windows Vista, setting up a network among multiple PCs and devices, such as printers and wireless access points, is simpler and more intuitive. The Network Setup Wizard easily and automatically identifies supported network devices and creates connections to the network. With devices that support Windows Connect Now, users can save network settings to a portable USB flash drive to make adding additional supported computers and devices quick and easy. Overall, the Network and Sharing Center provides a central location for all of your network connectivity needs. In addition, you are provided with a single point of reference to determine if sharing and discovery is enabled. Peer-to-peer or P2P communication and collaboration is becoming more essential than ever to organizational productivity and success. P2P networking enables direct client-to-client communication, providing faster data transmission and offering greater flexibility, such as deployment on disconnected or ad hoc networks. Windows Vista offers a comprehensive set of facilities supporting P2P application development with the Windows Peer-to-Peer Networking Platform. It enables the discovery of endpoints for communication and collaboration over the internet using the Peer Name Resolution Protocol, or PNRP, and over the local subnet using People Near Me, or PNM, technology. Windows Vista also supports inviting users to activities and establishing end-to-end application sessions. Windows Meeting Space, the new collaboration feature in Windows Vista, is a simple yet powerful tool that enables face-to-face collaboration among small groups of Windows Vista users at any time and anywhere. It is built entirely on the Windows Peer-to-Peer Networking Platform within Windows Vista. Windows Meeting Space can connect users either through an already existing network or by automatically creating an ad hoc wireless network. An ad hoc wireless network is perfect for collaboration when participants do not have access to a network infrastructure, for example, in a coffee shop or airport which does not have a wireless network. Diagnostic tools built into Network and Sharing Center simplify troubleshooting connectivity problems, and users can browse network resources. The Network Diagnostics Framework can help users troubleshoot many common connectivity problems without requiring a call to the support center. Richer diagnostic information is also recorded in the event viewer. For example, the Wireless LAN Diagnostics describes information about the wireless environment, including networks in range, number of wireless access points in range per Wireless Service Set Identifier, or SSID, information about the connection process, and which phase of the connection attempt failed, and the diagnostics resulting, including suggested repairs. These event records can be used by support professionals within organizations to perform further troubleshooting when network diagnostics were either unable to resolve the problem or if the steps were beyond what the user's rights allow. The event logs can significantly shorten the time needed to resolve wireless connection problems, resulting in the reduced cost of support calls and greater user satisfaction and productivity. Many applications connect to the internet to look for updates, download real-time information, and facilitate collaboration between users. However, creating applications that can automatically adapt to changing network conditions has been difficult for developers. Network awareness APIs enable applications to sense changes in the network that the computer is connected to. For example, network awareness would be able to recognize when a laptop is placed into standby mode at work and then opened at a wireless hotspot, such as a coffee shop. This enables Windows Vista to alert applications of network changes, and these applications can then behave differently to provide a seamless experience. Windows Vista identifies and remembers each of the networks to which it connects. Network and awareness APIs then allow applications to query for characteristics of each of these networks. One characteristic of the network is connectivity. A network may be disconnected, it may provide access to only the local network, or it may provide access to the local network and the internet. Windows Vista may be connected to a network by one or more connections, such as network adapters. Network awareness APIs enable applications to determine the connections that Windows Vista is currently using to connect to a given network. Finally, each network is assigned a category in Windows Vista that identifies the type of network it is. Some of Windows Vista's settings will change based upon the category of the network to which it is connected. For example, Windows Firewall with Advanced Security enforces different policies based upon the category of the network to which Windows Vista is currently connected. There are three categories of networks in Windows Vista: domain, public, and private. In the domain category, Windows Vista will automatically connect to an Active Directory domain controller where the computer is a member. Once Windows Vista identifies this network, no other networks can be placed in this category. Other than domain networks, by default, all networks are categorized as public. Networks that have direct connections to the internet or are in public places such as airports and coffee shops should be left public. A network will only be categorized as private if a user or application identifies the network as private. Only networks located behind a private gateway device that is acting as a firewall should be identified as private networks. Users will likely want to identify their home or small business networks as private. When a user connects to a network that is not part of the domain category, Windows Vista asks the user to identify the network as either public or private. The user must be a local administrator of the computer to identify the network as private. When the type of network to which the computer is connected is identified, Windows Vista is able to modify its configuration, such as firewall and file sharing settings, for the specified network category. Wireless auto-configuration improvements in Windows Vista further assists in easily connecting to networks. Wireless auto-configuration is a service that dynamically selects the wireless network to which the computer will automatically connect, based either on your preferences or on default settings. This includes automatically selecting and connecting to a more preferred wireless network when it becomes available. Wireless auto-configuration has been improved with Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista. First, there has been a change in behavior when there are no preferred wireless networks available. In Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, if a preferred wireless network could not be connected and the wireless client is configured to prevent automatic connection to a wireless networks that are not in the preferred list, the default, wireless auto-configuration creates a random wireless network name and places the wireless network adapter in infrastructure mode. This operation is known as parking the wireless network adapter. However, the random wireless network does not have a security configuration, making it possible for a malicious user to connect to the wireless client using the random wireless network name. In Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista, wireless auto-configuration parks the wireless network adapter with a random name and security configuration consisting of a 128-bit random encryption key and the strongest encryption method supported by the wireless network adapter. This new parking behavior helps prevent a malicious user from connecting to the wireless client using the random wireless network name. Wireless auto-configuration with Windows Vista also has new support for non-broadcast wireless networks. In Windows XP and Windows Server 2003, wireless auto configuration attempts to match configured preferred wireless networks with wireless networks that are broadcasting the network name. If none of the available networks match a preferred wireless network, wireless auto configuration then sends probe requests to determine if the preferred networks in the ordered list are non-broadcast networks, also known as hidden networks. The result of this behavior is that broadcast networks will be connected to before non-broadcast networks, even if a non-broadcast network is higher in the preferred list than a broadcast network. In Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista, you can configure wireless network as broadcast or non-broadcast. Therefore, Windows Server Longhorn or Windows Vista wireless clients only send probe requests for non-broadcast wireless networks. Now let's look at how to perform some of these connectivity steps in Windows Vista. In this demonstration, we will explore the Network and Sharing Center and show some wireless configuration steps. The Network and Sharing Center is a single point of access for all of the most common networking and sharing tasks. Every aspect of networking, from installing to configuring to managing, which in the current Windows XP operating system requires that you use several different tools, can now all be done in the Network and Sharing Center. The network map shows the current computer passing through the local network to access the internet. Just above the internet icon, there is an option to view a full map. The full network map is a more comprehensive tool that displays the network in greater detail. We can view the network to which we are connected. In this case, we are connected to the domain network. Windows Vista gives the user more control over the look and feel of operating system features. For example, within the Network and Sharing Center, you have the option to personalize your network. The Customize feature gives you the ability to assign a meaningful name to the various wireless networks to which you connect. For example, if you were to connect to a friend's access point and the SSID for his wireless network is simply Linksys, you could instead assign a friendly name to the network, such as John's House. In addition to changing the name of the network, you can change the network icon. Maybe the network you are connecting to is at one of your favorite coffee shops. You could select the coffee mug icon to visually identify the network. Not only does the Network and Sharing Center show network details, you can also configure sharing settings. Network discovery affects whether other computers and devices on the network are visible from your computer, and whether other computers on the network can see your computer. It also affects whether you can access shared devices and files on other computers on the network, and whether people using other computers on the network can access shared devices and files on your computer. While providing network and sharing visibility, it also helps provide the right level of security and access to your computer, based on the network location of the networks to which you are connected. You can share files and folders in several different ways. The most common way to do this in Windows is to share them directly from your computer. Windows provides two methods for sharing files in this way. You can share files from any folder on your computer or from the public folder. Which method you use depends on where you want to store the shared folders, who you want to share them with, and how much control you want to have over the files. Either method allows you to share files or folders with someone using your computer or using another computer on the same network. With file sharing, you can decide who will be able to make changes to the files you share and what kinds of changes, if any, they can make to them. You do this by setting shared permissions. Sharing permissions can be granted to an individual or to a group of users on the same network. You can also use this method of sharing as a way to access your shared files when you are using another computer, since any files you share with other people are also visible to you from another computer. Enabling public file sharing allows you to copy or move files to your public folder and share them from that location. If you turn on file sharing for the public folder, anyone with a user account and password on your computer, as well as everyone on the network, will be able to see all the files in your public folder and subfolders. You cannot restrict people to just seeing some files in the public folder. However, you can set permissions that either restrict people from accessing the public folder altogether, or that restrict them from changing files or creating new ones. In addition to file sharing, you can allow others to share printers connected to your computer. When media sharing is on, people and devices on the network can access shared music, pictures, and videos on this computer, and this computer can find those types of shared files on the network. Also from the Network and Sharing Center, you can view other computers and devices on your network. For example, we can see our domain controller, SEADC01. By clicking SEADC01, we could view any shared folders on that computer. In order to see the new Windows Vista Networking Diagnostics tool in action, we are going to disable the network card. Again, this can be done in the central location, the Network and Sharing Center. Clicking the View Status link will display a status screen that provides you with information such as the connection speed, the connection's duration, and whether the connection is using IPv4 or IPv6. If you click the Properties button, Windows will provide you with detailed information regarding the computer's TCP/IP configuration. For now, we just want to disable the network card, so we will choose the Configuration option. We are disabling the network card to create a problem with the network. In the Network and Sharing Center, it now displays Not Connected. We have successfully created a network problem that will need to be resolved. The Network Diagnostics Framework is an extensible architecture that helps users recover from and troubleshoot problems with network connections. It will prompt the user through a series of options to eliminate possible causes until the root cause of the problem is identified or all possibilities are eliminated. Windows Vista works its way down a symptom tree structure to figure out what is wrong with the network connection. This is different from Windows XP, which used the general approach of tearing down the TCP/IP network stack and then rebuilding it from scratch. Windows Vista recognizes that the network adapter on this computer is disabled. Rather than providing instructions to enable the network adapter, Windows Vista will enable it for you. This process is meant to be user-friendly. By enabling the network adapter for the user, the Network Diagnostics Framework is designed to reduce help desk calls. After enabling the network adapter, the computer is again connected to the network, but is unable to connect to the internet. This is because we are running on a closed network. To help users get connected to the internet, the diagnostics tool provides the two most likely issues blocking access to the internet, with instructions on how to fix the problem. The Network Diagnostics Framework has now restored our network to the previous state. The Network and Sharing Center provides links to assist in network connections and management. If there were any wireless networks available, Windows would automatically detect them and you would be able to set up a connection with that network, assuming you have the correct permissions on that network. You have several options in order to set up a connection or network. You can connect to the internet, which will set up a wireless, broadband, or dial-up connection to the internet, or you can use a wizard to set up a connection to your workplace through a dial-up or VPN connection. If you have multiple computers in your home or business, you can set up a network to connect to them. A wizard will guide us through the steps necessary to configure a wireless router or access point, set up file and printer sharing, save network settings, and get instructions for connecting other computers and devices to the network. In addition, the wizard will make this a private network. Depending on your network hardware, some of the options might not be available. Since we don't have a wireless network card available, we can choose an option that will create wireless settings that can be transferred to the router with the USB flash drive. You should only do this if you have a wireless router that supports USB flash drive configuration. When creating a network name, it is a good idea to choose a name that people who connect to your network will recognize. The network name can be up to 32 letters or numbers. As mentioned, this wizard will make the network private. To do this, Windows will use a passphrase you specify to generate a Wi-Fi Protected Access or WPA security key. WPA encrypts the information that is sent between computers on a wireless network and authenticates users to help ensure that only authorized people can access the network. Therefore, the first time that people connect to this network, they will need the passphrase. Next, we will set up file and printer sharing options. We will choose the option that will allow files in our public folder and shared printers to be accessible. At this point, you would save these settings to the USB flash drive and transfer them to the router. So we will stop the wizard since we don't have a flash drive. Managing networks is simple with Windows Vista. From the Network and Sharing Center, we can click the Manage Network Connections link, and we are taken to a page that lists the associated network connections. The only connection we have is a local area connection, but if you had other connections, such as wireless connections, you could also manage those from here. Since users can connect easier to networks with Windows Vista, it is important for these network connections to be secure. Now that we have explained some ways that connecting to the network is easier with Windows Vista, let's look at some ways network security has been increased. One of the shortcomings of the Windows Firewall with Windows XP is that it only blocked incoming traffic. Windows Firewall with Windows Vista blocks both incoming and outgoing traffic. The new Windows Firewall monitors incoming traffic and drops all unsolicited incoming traffic that does not correspond to either traffic sent in response to a request of the computer or unsolicited traffic that hasn't been specified as allowed. By blocking incoming traffic, Windows Firewall helps prevent the infection of computers by network-level viruses and worms that spread through unsolicited incoming traffic. The new Windows Firewall can also block outgoing traffic. For example, a network administrator can configure the new Windows Firewall with a set of rules to block all traffic to specific addresses containing either sensitive or undesirable content. The default behavior of the new Windows Firewall is to block all incoming traffic unless it is solicited or matches a configured rule. The default for outgoing traffic is to allow all unless it matches a configured rule. Computers running Windows Vista have IPv6 and Windows Firewall enabled by default and are protected from unwanted, unsolicited incoming IPv6 traffic. All Windows Firewall rules apply to both IPv4 and IPv6 traffic. Because Windows Firewall allows rules for incoming traffic based on TCP or UDP ports, or by specifying a program name, the rules are more specific than rules configured on typical network address translators. Windows Firewall also provides interface type support for RAS, LAN, and wireless communications. As the workforce is becoming more mobile, this adds additional security for communication with the entire network. With Windows Vista, there is increased network security with Windows Firewall and IP security integration. IP security, commonly called IPsec, is a suite of IP protocols used to provide secure communication. IPsec policies and filters distributed by group policy provide authorization for authenticated users and machines. IPsec provides the ability to protect communication between work groups, local area network computers, domain clients and servers, branch offices, extranets, and roving clients. Although IPsec has encryption capability, it is mostly used for end-to-end authentication. Combining both the new Windows Firewall and IPsec, administrators are able to better enforce isolation scenarios. By enforcing isolation scenarios, you are able to increase security by restricting network resource access to domain-joined computers. Administrators are continually faced with the challenge of providing accessibility to authorized computers and users while maintaining security. A server and domain isolation solution based on IPsec and Active Directory enables administrators to dynamically segment their Windows environment into more secure and isolated logical networks based on policy and without costly changes to their network infrastructure or applications. This creates an additional level of policy-driven protection and helps better protect against costly network attacks, helps prevent unauthorized access to trusted network resources, achieve regulatory compliance, and reduce operational costs. Network Access Protection, or NAP, in Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista provides policy enforcement components that help ensure that computers connecting to a network or communicating on a network comply with administrator-defined requirements for system health. Administrators can use a combination of policy validation and network access limitation components to control network access or communication. Administrators can also choose to temporarily limit the access of computers that do not meet requirements to a restricted network. Depending on the configuration chosen, the restricted network might contain resources required to update non-compliant computers so that they then meet the health requirements for unlimited network access and normal communication. NAP includes an API set for developers and vendors to create complete solutions for health policy validation, network access limitation, automatic remediation, and ongoing health policy compliance. NAP functions on four levels. It validates compliance to policy, restricts access-based compliance to policy, remediates as necessary, and grants access accordingly. NAP ensures the client's ongoing compliance to policy, and the NAP platform functions in real time. It recognizes, quarantines, and remediates threats before they can even pose a threat to the network. The process of NAP begins when a client attempts to access the network. When this client requests access to the network, it must present its current health status. Then the DHCP, VPN, or switch router relays the client's health status to a network policy server, or NPS. The NPS will then validate the health status against IT-defined health policies. If the client is policy compliant, it's given immediate access to the corporate network. Clients who do not meet the health requirements will be blocked from accessing the network. Instead, they are given access to remediation servers, which contain resources to make the client policy compliant. This process ensures that only healthy systems connect with the corporate network. Enforcement of NAP can be accomplished through either DHCP, VPN, IPsec, and/or 802.1x, which allows organizations to design and scope the deployment to suit unique business requirements. The policies can be configured specific to the risks and threat levels faced by each organization. The NAP platform integrates with the Active Directory, SMS, Security Center, Microsoft Update, and Windows Update, adding increased business value. In addition, Microsoft has made network access protection an open platform for the industry. Our partners have announced support of the NAP platform in their product lines, which responds to our common customers' requirements to provide a multi-vendor, interoperable end-to-end solution. The Network Access Protection platform fits in with the greater Microsoft goal of making your businesses more secure while remaining conscious of your business bottom line. As we mentioned, by combining IPsec and Windows Firewall in Windows Vista, administrators are able to manage both features in one location. In this demonstration, we will look at how to use the Windows Firewall with Advanced Security MMC Snap-in for the management of these features, and we will look at other ways to enforce IPsec policies. As you recall, with Windows XP, management of the Windows Firewall is mostly done through the Windows Firewall dialog box. This dialog box is still available with Windows Vista. From the Windows Firewall Settings dialog box, you can turn the firewall on and off. With the firewall on, all outside sources will be prevented from connecting to this computer, except for those unblocked on the Exceptions tab. Exceptions can be created on the Exceptions tab. However, the Exceptions dialog box doesn't give you much control over what types of exceptions you can create. Now with Windows Vista, you can configure advanced settings for the new Windows Firewall by accessing the Windows Firewall and Advanced Security Snap-in from the Administrator Tools Container and Control Panel. With the Windows Firewall and Advanced Security Snap-in, you can configure inbound and outbound rules and computer connection security. In addition, there are monitoring abilities within this console. To modify the new Windows Firewall state or specify additional settings that control Windows Firewall behavior, logging settings, and IPsec settings for each profile, we can open the properties of Windows Firewall with Advanced Security. Windows Firewall runs with three network profiles: domain, private, and public. The domain profile setting is applied when a computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account resides. The private profile is applied when a computer is connected to a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside. The private profile settings are typically more restrictive than the domain profile, because the private profile settings do not need to include applications and services that are used only in a managed domain environment. The public profile is applied when a computer is connected to a domain using a VPC connection or to a network in which the computer's domain account does not reside, such as the public network like the internet. The public profile settings are the most restrictive because the computer is connected to a public network where the security cannot be as tightly controlled as within an IT environment. Now we are going to show how to create firewall rules. We can create rules for both inbound and outbound traffic. Windows Firewall will examine all incoming traffic against the rules we create and allow the traffic we specify. To create an inbound rule, right-click Inbound Rules in the tree and then click New Rule. Alternately, we can click Inbound Rules in the tree and then click New Rules in the Actions pane. A new feature of the Windows Firewall with Windows Vista is the ability to configure outbound rules in addition to inbound rules. Once the new Outbound Rule Wizard starts, you can specify rules based on several conditions. First, you can create a rule for incoming traffic based on a program name. Next, you can specify a rule for outgoing traffic based on TCP or UDP ports. When creating a rule for a port, you must specify an action, the profile to which the rule applies, and a name for the rule. You can specify several predefined rules. Finally, you can create a custom rule, which is a rule that does not specify a program, port, or predefined service. You would select this option when you want to manually configure rule behavior, perhaps based on advanced settings that cannot be configured through the pages of the new Outbound Rule Wizard. For the outbound rule, we are going to create a rule based on a program. We need to specify the location of the program for which we want to create the rule. We are going to specify Internet Explorer as the program we will allow outbound traffic from. We can allow only connections that have been authenticated and integrity protected through the use of IPsec. Connections will be secured using the settings in IPsec properties and rules in the Connection Security Rule node. Next, we need to specify the profile to which the rule applies. If we select Domain, it will apply when a computer is connected to the corporate domain. We'll configure this rule to only apply to the domain profile. We'll name this rule Internet Explorer. After the new Outbound Rule Wizard has completed, there is a new outbound rule with the name we specified in the Details pane. Configuring IPsec policies in Windows Server 2003 and Windows XP has not been a particularly easy and efficient process. The experience began with right-clicking IP security policies and following the wizard to create an IP security policy. On average, it would take you about 100 mouse clicks using these wizards to create the policy for a domain isolation scenario. One of the reasons for this is that when we originally designed an interface for the IPsec policy manager, we exposed everything to you, the administrator. We gave you access to every single option and tool without wrapping them around scenarios. We avoid this in Windows Vista. In the Windows Firewall and Advanced Security MMC Snap-in, we've combined the management of both the Windows Firewall and IPsec into a single interface. This avoids any confusion around when to use IP filters and determining how to take advantage of a secure connection, while ensuring only secure traffic is allowed in and out of the computer. The best part of this is we've taken the old IPsec configuration interface and introduced a new wizards-based approach designed around scenarios. From the beginning, you'll notice this is a better and easier way to create a policy. We start with four options for creating the new policy, with the fifth option to create a custom rule. An isolation rule restricts connections based on authentication criteria that you define. For example, you can use this rule type to isolate computers in your domain from computers outside your domain, such as computers on the internet or another domain. You can use this rule type to exempt specific computers or a group of range of IP addresses or computers from being required to authenticate themselves, regardless of other connection security rules. This rule type is commonly used to grant access to infrastructure computers that this computer must communicate with before authentication can be performed. It is also used for other computers that cannot use the form of authentication you configured for this policy and profile. Infrastructure computers such as Active Directory domain controllers, certification authorities or CAs, or DHCP servers might be allowed to communicate with this computer before authentication can be performed. To create an authentication exemption rule, you only need to specify the computers or a range or group of IP addresses and give the rule a name and description. Use the server-to-server rule type to authenticate communications between two specific computers, between two groups of computers, between two subnets, or between a specific computer and a group of computers or a subnet. You might use this rule to authenticate the traffic between a database server and a business layer computer, or between an infrastructure computer and another server. Use the tunnel rule type to secure communications traveling between two peer computers through tunnel endpoints, such as virtual private networking, or VPN, or IPsec Layer 2 Tunneling Protocol, L2TP, tunnels. Instead of trying to decide filter actions or what filters to use, the first steps in creating the isolation rule is to decide what type of authentication you want to use. The classic domain isolation policy is to require that whenever someone wants to talk to you, they have to negotiate IPsec. If you want to talk to another computer, we'll request IPsec, but not require it. The next step for creating the communication policy is to determine what type of authentication we want to use. In earlier versions of Windows, you were basically limited to computer-level credentials. One of the new features within Windows Vista and networking is that we can now authenticate on user and health. Health is where network access protection comes in. We can decide when this rule is in place based on network profiles. Since this is a domain isolation policy, we'll just enable it when the domain controller can be reached on the local network. We'll give the policy a name. Now we've completed the configuration of an IPsec policy in less than 10 clicks. Once we've created the IPsec policy, we can view the properties to make any necessary adjustments to the settings. For example, we can specify that this policy is in place between specific endpoints on the network. Or we can change the authentication method. We can also specify the interface to which this rule applies. You may want to create a specific rule that requires authentication when using only your wireless network connection. The final component of new networking features with Windows Vista is the management of the network. So now that we have looked at ways Windows Vista assists in securing your network, we will look at new and improved ways to manage your network with Windows Vista. Earlier in this session, we explained a new feature with the new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn called Receive Window Auto-Tuning. To summarize, receive window auto-tuning is used to correctly determine the value of the maximum receive window size for connection based on the current conditions of the network. This feature makes the use of policy-based quality of service, or QoS, more important for networks that are operating at or near capacity. Without QoS policies in place, most network traffic is delivered on a best effort basis, even though users and applications with specific network performance requirements may require preferential service levels. Starting with Windows 2000, applications had to be written or modified to use the generic QoS Application Programming Interface, or GQoS API. Now with Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista, you can prioritize traffic and manage sending rates for any networking application. QoS in Windows Vista allows IT departments to centrally manage network bandwidth set by computers running Windows Vista, regardless of the application and across an entire Active Directory infrastructure. Because the traffic management is occurring at the network layer, applications do not need to be written or modified to use GQoS APIs, allowing traffic management for existing applications. With a QoS policy, you can manage the use of bandwidth by setting a throttle rate for outbound traffic. The throttle rate set in a QoS policy will limit the total outgoing network traffic to a specified rate. Additionally, with QoS policies, you can define the priority of traffic. You can configure a QoS policy to mark outbound network traffic with the Differentiated Services Code Point, or DSCP value, which allows classification at the IP level. When routers receive the traffic, they will use the DSCP value to decide which queue to place the packet. You can configure how the routers will respond to traffic according to the DSCP values. The routers will use your configured settings to place the traffic in either a high priority, best effort, or lower than best effort queue. This policy ensures that more critical network traffic gets preference and is not delayed by other lower priority traffic. Both DSCP marking and throttling can be used together to manage traffic effectively. QoS in Windows Vista allows IT departments to prioritize or manage the sending rate for outgoing network traffic based on the following conditions: Source or Destination Internet Protocol version 4 or Internet Protocol version 6 addresses, protocol either TCP, UDP, or both, or source or destination ports. Now we are going to show how to configure a QoS policy for two scenarios. First, we will show how to create a QoS policy for web traffic, and then a policy for voice over IP traffic. IT departments must balance network performance against costs. As business applications and data access become more distributed, employee productivity is more affected by network performance. Windows Vista solves this problem with quality of service, or QoS, policies. Let's look at how to use group policy in Windows Vista to create a QoS policy. We can access the QoS Policies node from two locations. A new QoS policy created in the User Configuration node applies to users after they have logged on, regardless of which computer they have logged on to. A QoS policy created in the Computer Configuration node applies to computers regardless of the user that is currently logged on. Normally, you use computer-based QoS policies for server computers. For this demonstration, we will create a computer-based QoS policy. When we choose to create a new policy, the QoS policy wizard will start. The first page of the QoS policy wizard allows us to specify a policy name and configure the treatment of outgoing traffic. The QoS policy name must be unique to the QoS policy node in which the policy is being created. Say our company wants to configure a QoS policy that will prevent a set of web servers from monopolizing network bandwidth for hypertext transfer protocol over secure sockets layer, or HTTP over SSL traffic. Therefore, we will name this policy web traffic. One option on this page is to enable differentiated services code point marking, such as voice over IP, which we will configure in the next task. We are going to specify a throttle rate of 512 kilobytes per second for our web server QoS policy. The throttle rate entered must be a value greater than 1 and can be either in kilobytes per second or megabytes per second. On the next page, we can specify whether the policy is for all applications or a specific application. When you click All Applications, the traffic management settings specified on the first page of the QoS Policy Wizard are applied to all applications. When you click Only Applications with this executable name, the traffic management settings specified on the first page of the QoS Policy Wizard are applied to a specific application. You must type the executable file name and it must end with .exe. We can now tell the wizard how to apply the traffic management settings we outlined on the first page. We can apply the settings to all source IPv4 or IPv6 addresses, or to all destination IPv4 or IPv6 addresses. We also have the option to apply the settings to one or more specific source or destination IP addresses. Now we are going to specify that the traffic management settings apply to our TCP port traffic from our web server port 443. Other options allow us to select UDP traffic only or both TCP and UDP traffic. After QoS policies are configured and GPOs are linked to Active Directory containers, computers running Windows Server Longhorn or Windows Vista automatically download the GPOs and apply the QoS policy settings for outgoing traffic. Our company also wants to give higher priority to time-dependent voice over IP or VoIP traffic. So we are going to use a DSCP value to create a QoS policy for the VoIP traffic. We will call this policy VoIP traffic. We are going to specify a DSCP value of 46 for the VoIP traffic, which will allow routers to place these packets in a low latency queue. A DSCP value must be between 0 and 63. We will configure this policy to apply to all applications. We will use all IP addresses for this policy. We have finished creating our VoIP traffic QoS policy. There are some general traffic classes that you may want to consider when creating QoS policies, such as traffic between domain controllers and mission-critical business applications, such as customer database access traffic. All other traffic may be grouped together as best effort traffic with the DSCP value of 0. You may also want to group together bulk data transfers from file backup traffic with your best effort traffic. Something else to consider is the number of traffic classes. DSCP values may not equal the number of network router queues. For example, your organization may choose to have different classes for administration and control traffic and mission-critical business application traffic, but have both classes of traffic use the same router queue. By using different DSCP values, you can analyze different classes of traffic without configuring queues, either for reporting purposes or for the future planning of routing queues. Wireless administration has been improved with Windows Vista with the enhancement of wireless group policy. Wireless network IEEE 802.11 policies in Windows Server 2003 with Service Pack 1 do not support the centralized configuration of Wi-Fi Protected Access 2 or WPA2 authentication options. Now, wireless group policy settings in Windows Server Longhorn allow the configuration of WPA2 authentication options. The wireless group policy settings in Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista allow you to configure lists of allowed and denied wireless network names. With an allow list, you can specify the set of wireless networks by name, or SSID, to which the Windows Server Longhorn or Windows Vista wireless client is allowed to connect. This is useful for network administrators that want an organization's laptop computer to connect to a specific set of wireless networks, which might include the organization's wireless network and wireless internet service providers. With Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, you have additional preferred wireless network settings available. You can set fast roaming settings. Fast roaming is an advanced capability of WPA2 wireless networks that allow wireless clients to more quickly roam from one wireless AP to another by using pre-authentication and pairwise master key, PMK, caching. Also with Windows Vista, you can now configure preferred wireless networks and wireless group policy settings as hidden networks, and you can now configure preferred wireless networks for automatic or manual connection. Windows Server 2003 or Windows XP does not have a command line interface that allows you to configure the wireless settings that are available from the wireless dialog boxes in the Network Connections folder or through the Wireless Network IEEE 802.11 policies group policy settings. Now, with Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn, you can use the command line for configuration of wireless settings. Deployment of wireless networks is simplified by providing automated script support for wireless settings without using Group Policy Wireless Network or IEEE 802.11 policies. Since group policy settings only apply in an Active Directory domain, for an environment without Active Directory or a group policy infrastructure, a script that automates the configuration of wireless connections can be run either manually or automatically, such as part of the login script. The deployment of secure wireless technologies has promoted the use of Layer 2 network authentication, such as 802.1x, to ensure that only an appropriate user or device is allowed on the protected network, and that their data is secure at the radio transmission level. The single sign-on feature of Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista executes 802.1x authentication at the appropriate time based on the network security configuration, while simply and seamlessly integrating with the user's Windows logon experience. Network administrators can use group policy settings or the new NetSH WLAN commands to configure single sign-on profiles on wireless client computers. After a single sign-on profile is configured, 802.1x authentication will precede the computer logon to the domain, and users are only prompted for credential information if needed. This feature ensures that the wireless connection is placed prior to the computer domain logon, which enables scenarios that require network connectivity prior to user logon, such as group policy updates, execution of logon scripts, and wireless client domain joins. Let's look at how to administer wireless group policy in Windows Vista. In this demonstration, we will show how to manage wireless connections in the Group Policy Management Console and via the command line. New group policy settings have been introduced with Windows Vista to provide easier wireless network management. At this time, the Active Directory schema needs to be updated to use the wireless group policy settings. This can be done from the sources/adprep folder on the Windows Vista installation media. We have already performed these steps on our domain controller. Notice that there is also wired network policies available. Settings defined in this policy will apply to all wireless interfaces of client computers. After specifying a policy name, we can enter a description that will allow administrators to identify the policy's purpose. In this policy, you can choose whether to allow clients to use Windows WLAN autoconfig service. Right now, we don't have any wireless networks available, so for demonstration purposes, we are going to create an ad hoc network. In the network list, we can connect to networks in the order specified. We can add, move, import, export, and delete networks. A non-broadcasting wireless network does not advertise its network name, also known as the Service Set Identifier, or SSID. A wireless access point of a non-broadcasting wireless network can be configured to send beacon frames with an SSID set to null. A non-broadcasting wireless network is also known as a hidden wireless network. In Windows XP, you cannot configure a preferred wireless network as a non-broadcasting wireless network. The behavior of wireless auto-configuration in Windows XP is to attempt connections to broadcasting wireless networks before non-broadcasting wireless networks. Therefore, a computer running Windows XP could automatically connect to a broadcasting network instead of a non-broadcasting network that is higher in the preferred wireless networks list. In Windows Vista, you can now configure wireless networks as broadcast or non-broadcast. A computer running Windows Vista will attempt to connect to wireless networks in the preferred networks list order, regardless of whether they are broadcast or non-broadcast. In addition, non-broadcast networks appear in the list of available networks with the name Unnamed Network. Currently, our new SSID network is allowed. In the permissions list, we can quickly see the network type, either infrastructure or ad hoc, and the current permissions on the network. In addition to network preference, you can specify several other settings in this policy. You can prevent connections to only ad hoc networks, only infrastructure networks, or both. You may want to allow your users to view denied networks, although they won't be able to connect to the network. By default, everyone is allowed to create all user profiles. For greater security, you may want to disable this setting. Now our Windows Vista wireless policy is in effect. But maybe you haven't converted all your workstations to Windows Vista and some are still running Windows XP. You can still create wireless group policy settings for these computers, although you don't have all the same options. We can specify which types of network clients running Windows XP can access. Any available network, infrastructure networks only, or ad hoc networks only. When you choose any available network, an access point is still the preferred connection. Like with the Vista policy, we have the option to disable using Windows WLAN autoconfig service for clients. We can also disable or enable automatic connection to non-preferred networks. On the Preferred Networks tab, you can specify the order in which you would prefer clients connect. The Windows Vista NetSH commands for Wireless Local Area Networks, or WLAN, provides methods to configure connectivity and security settings. You can use the NetSH WLAN commands to configure the local computer or to configure multiple computers by using a logon script. You can also use the NetSH WLAN commands to view wireless group policy settings and to administer WISP and user wireless settings. The wireless NetSH interface has several benefits. It provides a lightweight alternative to group policy to configure wireless connectivity and security settings. In addition, there is mixed mode support. This allows administrators to configure clients to support multiple security options. For example, a client can be configured to support both the WPA2 and the WPA authentication standard. This allows the client to use WPA2 to connect to networks that support WPA2 and use WPA to connect to networks that only support WPA. Finally, you can block undesirable networks. Administrators can block and hide access to non-corporate wireless networks by adding specific networks or network types to the list of denied networks. Also, administrators can allow access to corporate wireless networks. You can add or delete filters or profiles to the specified wireless interface on the computer. You can also connect or disconnect from a wireless network with the NetSH WLAN dump command. You can generate and save a script that contains the current configuration to the specified location. As you can see, you can change some of the preferences like you could in group policy. However, there is now a tracing option. With this option, the trace logs for the wireless LAN will be collected and saved to the trace files. The trace logs will be located at C:\Windows/tracing/wireless. This is just one of the different things you can do with the NetSH WLAN commands. As organizations grow, they become more concerned about potential scalability issues when supporting their network. For example, they may begin running out of available IP addresses. Windows Vista addresses network scalability concerns by supporting IPv6 and hardware offload capabilities. In the architecture for multiprocessor computers running Windows Server 2003 or Windows XP, a network adapter is associated with the single processor. The single processor must handle all the traffic received by the network adapter, regardless of whether there are other processors available. The result of this architecture for high-volume servers such as internet-facing web servers or enterprise file servers is that the amount of incoming traffic and number of connections that can be serviced by the processor associated with the network adapter is limited. If the processor associated with the network adapter cannot handle the incoming traffic fast enough, the network adapter discards the traffic, resulting in retransmissions and reduced performance. In Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista, a network adapter is not associated with a single processor. Instead, the processing for incoming traffic is distributed among the processors on the computer. This new feature, known as receive-side scaling, or RSS, allows for much more traffic to be received by a network adapter on a high-volume server. A multiprocessor computer can now handle more incoming traffic without having to add servers, resulting in lower costs. To take advantage of this new feature, you must install RSS-capable network adapters that can take advantage of the new architecture in Windows Server Longhorn and Windows Vista. RSS-capable network adapters are available from many network adapter vendors. To solve problems with limited public IPv4 addresses, many governments, internet service providers, or ISPs, and other organizations are transitioning to IPv6, the next version of the network protocol that drives the internet. Windows Vista supports both IPv4 and IPv6 together through a dual IP layer architecture. IPv6 is enabled by default without any additional steps necessary by the administrator, and the dual IP layer support enables you to gradually migrate using IPv6 transition technologies that can tunnel IPv6 traffic across a private IPv4 network or the IPv4 internet. Windows Vista natively supports point-to-point protocol for IPv6, or PPPv6, and Layer 2 Tunneling Protocol, L2TP, IPsec VPNs, enabling remote access users to take advantage of the benefits of IPv6 networks. IPv6 provides several benefits for TCP/IP-based networking connectivity. First, the 128-bit address space for IPv6 provides ample room to provide every device on the present and foreseeable future internet with a globally reachable address. With a streamlined IPv6 header and IPv6 addressing that supports hierarchical routing infrastructures, IPv6 routers on the internet can forward IPv6 traffic faster than their IPv4 counterparts. IPv6 hosts can configure themselves by either interacting with a dynamic host configuration protocol for IPv6 or DHCPv6 server, or by interacting with their local router and using stateless address auto-configuration. Finally, the IPv6 standards solve some of the security issues of IPv4 by providing better protection against address and port scanning attacks, and by requiring that all IPv6 implementations support IPsec for cryptographic protection of IPv6 traffic. IPv4 and IPv6 are supported natively within the single new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn. Applications that are written solely for IPv4 will still function as expected. Applications provided with Windows Vista have been updated to support the new Windows Sockets functions that are independent of IPv4 or IPv6. In Windows Vista, applications and services that support both IPv4 and IPv6 will by default prefer the use of IPv6 over IPv4. This behavior can be configured by the administrator. To ease the transition to IPv6, Windows Vista supports the Teredo IPv6 transition technology, which performs NAT traversal for IPv6 traffic. Teredo provides connectivity for server or peer-based applications running on computers that are located behind NATs, without having to modify applications or configure NATs. In Release Candidate 1 of Windows Vista, Teredo is enabled by default but inactive. In order to become active, a user must either install an application that needs to use Teredo or choose to change firewall settings to allow an application to use Teredo. Let's review what we have covered today. The new TCP/IP stack in Windows Vista and Windows Server Longhorn includes a new set of performance enhancements to increase throughput in high bandwidth, high latency, and high loss networking environments. Changes in networking with Windows Vista provides an enhanced networking experience for the IT administrator with great security features and easier network management. The end user gets a rich, seamless, and dependable networking experience with Windows Vista, even when connecting through a wireless connection. To get more information on the products and technologies we have covered today, we have some online resources available that can help. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/technet. Additionally, visit www.microsoft.com/technet/tsk-14 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Popular author and MVP William Stanek offers expert insights in this first look into the latest generation of Windows operating systems. Discover the new features and tools for deploying Windows Vista, help secure PCs and user accounts, migrate user settings and data, manage application compatibility, improve reliability, reduce support costs, develop applications, and help users achieve new levels of productivity and success at home or on the job. Introducing Microsoft Windows Vista is a guided preview for IT professionals, business decision makers, early adopters, users, developers, and anyone else who wants to start planning and hit the ground running with Windows Vista. There are a number of other good books from other publishers. Here is the ultimate one-stop desk reference for Windows Vista users. Windows Vista, the complete reference, provides comprehensive coverage of the newest features of the operating system. From setting up for optimum performance and understanding the operating system, to finding files and keeping computer systems secure and free from spyware, This volume covers it all. It's the ideal resource for anyone who wants to truly master Windows Vista. There is also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It's an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In the highly competitive IT job market, how can you set yourself apart from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the ability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals, and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. Several accreditations are available. Starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, or MCP, you can become a fully certified System Administrator, or MCSA, System Engineer, MCSE, or a Desktop Specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certification covers the SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which you might find interesting. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Ian Brackenberry, TechNet Subscriptions Product Manager, to cover these changes.
TechNet Plus Subscription introduces its newest offering, TechNet Plus Direct. With TechNet Plus Direct, subscribers get all of the benefits of TechNet Plus for 30% less. Subscribers receive fast, easy access to the tools and information they need to get the most out of Microsoft solutions. Subscription provides IT professionals with immediate online access to all the essential technical resources they need to resolve technical issues faster, get hands-on experience with the latest Microsoft technologies, and build technical skills. Subscribers now get immediate access to all their subscription features in one convenient location, our new online benefits portal. Subscribers get access through subscriber download to Microsoft full version software for evaluation and beta releases without time or feature limits. No more waiting for media shipments. This includes Microsoft Server, client, and application software titles. With full version software, subscribers can make informed decisions about new technologies and deployments at their own pace. For the toughest technical questions, a TechNet Plus subscription also comes with two complimentary professional support incidents. Subscribers can talk to a Microsoft support professional to quickly resolve their mission-critical technical issues fast. TechNet Plus also provides access to over 100 managed news groups. Subscribers can exchange ideas with other professionals and get expert answers to their technical questions within the next business day, guaranteed. In addition, subscribers can also chat with a Microsoft Search Assistant online for help finding the technical resources they need or for assistance with non-technical questions. Subscribers also get access to technical information and tools, including the TechNet Plus library containing the knowledge base, security updates, service packs, resource kits, and more. TechNet Plus offers proven value that far exceeds its cost. The two complementary professional support incidents alone more than offset the cost of a TechNet Plus subscription. Add to that the evaluation and beta software and other technical resources, and TechNet Plus clearly boosts productivity. Every IT professional on the team needs one. TechNet Plus is available exclusively online without media shipments. For more information, please visit technet.microsoft.com/subscriptions. There are a number of free community resources available on TechNet. You can attend a regular chat with members of the product groups or technology specialists from Microsoft, or you can attend a webcast where you can see sessions like the one you've just watched, but presented live and with the ability to ask questions as you go. You can also read or post questions in public news groups. The news group page lists the available groups and provides an interface from which you can read and post messages. TechNet Plus subscribers can use these groups to post questions, and through their subscription ID, are guaranteed a response from Microsoft support professionals and IT experts by the next business day. The main community site provides a comprehensive list of resources available, more than we can cover on this slide, and the page has some dynamic features with continually updated content. The events page provides dates and details about attending a live TechNet event. These events take place around the world and provide the opportunity for you to talk to Microsoft specialists face-to-face. And finally, the TechNet columns provide a variety of topics written by industry authors. And with that, thank you for taking the time to listen to this TechNet session.